Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Happy, 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 happy Friday, Cast.
Good Friday to you, Amy, and your lovely sister, Sarah.
Hello, hello.
Oh, Sarah, this is why I'm so happy is like have you on the podcast. I don't think we've ever interviewed a sibling on the podcast ever, ever.
I'm pretty excited.
Oh, we're very excited.
Listen to that Queensland accent coming out already, lovely.
It's a bit different to when I used to live in Melbourne, hey?
Yeah, just slightly. How long have you lived in Queensland for now, Sarah?
I would have moved up and started 2018, so 12 years, 12 and a half years.
2008, do you mean?
Sorry, 2008, yes. Let's clarify that.
Also, like 2 years. You've been there way longer than 2 years.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Making babies and building a life.
Yeah, that's right.
That's so good.
Yeah, 12 years.
So I feel like we need to give some backstory, Sarah, because so Sarah's my sister. And anyone who has seen photos of us on Facebook will know that we're sisters because everyone thinks that we look exactly the same. Sarah, tell us about what Facebook thinks of our faces.
So every time a photo of Amy gets uploaded to Facebook by Amy or any of her friends, it automatically tags me in it. So I don't get notifications on Facebook on my phone, but I'll open Facebook and it'll be like, you've been tagged in Sydney with Kirsty. I'm like, that would be lovely, but actually my sister Amy. Or some random people tag me. I'm like, I don't even know who this person is. And now I go, oh, hang on, it's Amy and it's one of Amy's friends. And I don't actually think me and Amy look that similar. I think she looks like our other sister, Laura, but Facebook disagrees.
Yeah, I think we've looked more similar over the last couple of years, but I can't work out how to disable it. Like, I want to send a message to Facebook saying, you think that my face is Sarah's face? Because even when I upload an image of like our podcast cover art, that's Kirsty and I, it still thinks it's you.
Yeah, it's, yeah, even, yeah, clear images and it's always with Kirsty and, yeah.
I think it's the glasses.
Yeah, that probably helps.
Yeah, curly hair.
Yeah, and we are the two best looking Georgia girls. Of course. Far.
Go to that side.
Okay, Sarah, where do you come in the five children?
So I am number four. I was the youngest for 9.5 years though. And I still remember when Mum broke the news that I wasn't going to be the youngest anymore. I was devastated.
Did you cry?
No, but inside I was absolutely devastated.
Yeah.
then I love being a big sister. I love
that. Yeah. And you are functionally the youngest as well. Like, I think by after 9.5 years of being the youngest, then Beck almost became another firstborn.
Yeah, in some ways, you're correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That's what happens with big gaps. It's like a second family.
Yes.
Yes. Even so, though she was a mini you too.
And that's why Beck's the fun auntie. Like,
yes.
All our kids just love her because she's, you know, she's an adult, but she's also so much fun.
Well, she's closer in age to my kids than she is to me.
That's right. Yeah.
So what's the difference between you two?
5 years.
Yeah, between me and Amy.
Yeah. I think, so that's establishing, Sarah, you and I, but there's also a history of you and Kirsty that I think we need to explore.
You We've two got have, a few histories.
Yes, yes. Can you two tell us about it?
Probably the first connection, Kirsty, was probably your sister Jackie was my youth group leader probably first when I was about 13 in year 8. So that's probably how I first connected to your family. And then in my teens, from about 15 to 17, I dated your brother Phil. So I spent a lot of time at your house in those
years. Yeah, so have you listened to our episode with my mum yet?
I haven't yet. Homeschooling is
taking over. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Or learning from home.
Yeah, it was only released a couple of hours ago, so you are forgiven.
Thank you.
So yesterday when we interviewed my mum, Amy was talking about coming over to our house and I asked her what she remembered and then she reminded me that she doesn't have a great memory. But so you probably have a better memory and you were there a whole heap more than Amy was. So can you tell us what you remember of our home, my home, when you were hanging out with us?
I probably remember it being relaxed. So there was always different people coming and going. Everything was shared. So, you know, when it was dinner time, your mum would cook or I think maybe your dad would help out sometime. But I just remember, you know, you had that big table near the stairs and whoever there was welcome to share with the food. And you had that awesome area upstairs where everyone just kind of hung out and going.
What was I like? Was I a lovely big sister to Phil and you or was I not so lovely?
I think you were a little bit scary. Because I knew Jackie from being youth group leader. She was my youth group leader for a lot of that time, so I had that relationship with her. And Larissa was kind of Laura's friend and only a couple of years older, but you were kind of, I don't know if you were at uni at the time, but I think you're more, you know, the responsible older sister, maybe a little bit bossy sometimes, but you're still always lovely to me, but I probably didn't spend as much time with you.
Yeah, there is 9 years between Phil and I.
Yeah,
so the same
right.
difference between you and Beck is between Phil and I. So if you, are you the same age as Phil?
I'm a year older.
Year older. Yeah. So when Phil was 14, I was 21.
That's
and
right.
then when, so I was 21, 22, 23. So I was out working and
different phases of life.
Yeah. But you met my husband when he came on the scene because you were both on the scene. You both started going out with us similar times. Well,
that's
like you
right.
were there when I started going out with Simon. So what was your initial impressions of Simon?
I have.
Be honest. It's fine.
I have one time which I remember very clearly. So your family had rented a holiday house down at Apollo Bay, which on Great Ocean Road in Victoria, and we all lived in Melbourne. And the partners were invited along for a couple of nights to come stay, and it worked out that I think everyone else was down there except me and Simon. So Simon offered to drive me down. They would have been about 16 years old. And I was so nervous because I was like, I don't know, maybe 2.5 hour trip. And I was worried how we're going to fill the silences, if it was going to be really awkward and, you know, awkward 16-year-old girl going in a car with, I don't know how old Simon was, early 20s.
Mid-20s. He would have been 25.
That's
he would have been 25.
When you're like 15, 16, you see.
Yeah, that's a big
older.
Difference there.
Yeah.
That's massive.
That's
right.
And I'd obviously met him a few times before this, but and the car trip was really easy. Like we played some music and we had things to talk about the whole way down. It was absolutely lovely. And I was dreading it before that. I was so nervous.
Was that the holiday? Yeah, it's pretty cool memory. Thank you for sharing that, Sarah. Was that, this is dropping my brothers in it, was that the holiday that my brothers shared a little bit too much skin with everybody through a window.
I cannot remember that at all.
Sounds like something the Thompson boys would do.
I remember the house and I remember the car trip with Simon. That's all I really remember from that few days.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And Sarah, Kirst, you go.
No, go. It's fine.
I was going to say, Sarah, tell us about your family now. Like, who's in your family? How many gorgeous kids do you have?
Because you clearly didn't marry my brother.
No. We went our different ways in the end of high school kind of time. So I met my husband Luke through his sister, and he is a local, been a local, lived in Whit Sundays most of his life. So he came down to Melbourne for 2 years while I finished uni, and then as soon as I finished uni, he proposed and wanted to move back up to the Whit Sundays. And so I moved back up here, and we've since had three boys. So got Tommy, who's 9, Charlie, who's 7, and Eddie, who's nearly 5.
And they are the cutest things ever. Do you live in town or do you live on land? How would you describe kind of where you live?
Yeah, okay. So we live on a little hobby farm. So it's 3 acres. We've got a few sheep and chickens and all that kind of thing that we breed. We live about 5 minutes from town, town being Proserpine, and that's got a population of about 3,000 people. We also have a beach house, so that's about half an hour way down on the coast. It's a gorgeous little place, only about 50 houses, really nice little community down there. Our closest city is Mackay, which is about an hour and a half each way. And we've kind of got a Big W down Ellie Beach, which is about half an hour way, but other than that, we're pretty isolated. So we've got in town, we've got a couple little supermarkets and a few specialty shops, but if you want to go to do a big shop or anything like that, you've really got to do a 3-hour round trip on the highway. So it is a different lifestyle to being in the city, and you've really got to think about the things you purchase, and you've got to wait for it and do it all in one trip.
So what has your journey on minimalism and decluttering and being organized? Like, we know that your mum was super organized. Did you pick up that tendency, or were you different growing up? And then what does it look like now for you guys?
I think I probably sit in the middle somewhere. So I'm definitely not as organized as Mum and Amy all the time, but I go through phases. So I like labeling and like having a clean pantry. I do a lot of cooking, so that area is always pretty organised. But then, say my linen closet, I'll organise it, and then 6 months later, it'll be pretty messy again. And then I'll do it all again, be really happy, and like, yeah, I'm going to keep it like this. And then I just don't prioritise it, and I'll chuck the sheets in with the towels and all that kind of thing. So I'm not very good at keeping it organised.
Cool. And do you listen to our podcast?
I don't listen every week, but I go through phases of, doing 5 episodes in a few days, and then I get distracted and go into something else.
Amy did that the other day and she got sick of our voices. So yeah. Do you not get sick of our voices?
No, I kind of like flowing on and going with the same podcast for a few days. Mm. And then, I just kind of change it up and then go back and do a few.
Yeah. Do you know what?
Go, Amy.
I was going to say, Sarah, the other day we interviewed Dad. You, I know you've heard it. And we asked him, had he listened to our podcast? And he said he listened to a few. I haven't even told Kirsty this yet. But when I rang him when it was live, he said, "Now, how do I download a podcast?" I said, "Dad, you told me you've listened to our podcast a few times." He goes, yeah, the ones that you do on Facebook. I go, "No, Dad, they're Facebook Lives." He'd never listened to a podcast. He thought he was doing a Facebook Live with us, but with our videos on.
So just a verbal Facebook.
Poor John.
Yeah, I'm not sure he knew what a podcast was, but he still eagerly agreed to come on it.
Which is lovely.
Which is so lovely.
I love podcasts. So I got my kids at school when, COVID-19 isn't happening, and when I'm at home doing jobs, hanging out, washing, cooking, mowing the lawn, anything, I always have podcasts going in the car. I love them. And having the kids home, for the last 6-7 weeks, I'm missing listening to my podcast as much.
Me too. Mm. I just put that on a Facebook page today. Somebody was asking about something, like Australian podcasters, something. And they were saying, and I said, we've had great numbers during COVID, because they were all asking about COVID and how it's affected their podcasting. And I said, we've had great numbers, but that's because we're doing daily episodes. I still don't think we've got the amount of listeners. The amount of listeners has dropped off, but people are listening. The people who are listening every day are listening every day. And I said in my post about it, I said, but I've only listened to one podcast in 7 weeks.
Oh.
And like, it's because I just don't have any time to listen, because children are around me all the time.
I've listened to 4 already today, and it's lunchtime.
Oh, I'm jealous, Amy.
Yes.
Sarah, what do you like listening to? What are your favorite podcasts?
True crime.
Yeah, okay. Me too.
Yep.
And Sarah, who's your favorite host of The Art of Decluttering?
Oh,
go on.
I think you've both got great quality.
Not even going to be loyal. Come on. All right. Sarah, a couple of the reasons that we wanted to get you on is because you do live, would you classify yourself as rural or is it country?
It's definitely, it's rural.
Okay. So we've had a lot of questions over the last couple of years saying, you know, all what you're sharing is well and good, but you girls live in a city and the majority of the clients you do are in the city. And so we thought a great opportunity too to get some insight from you. So as well as living rural, you can tell us about what that's like when it comes to decluttering, but also tell us what your family manages.
Yeah, so Luke and his family have been managing the local landfills for, I think, nearly 20 years. So it goes by landfill, dump, tip, whichever you like to call it. So I guess that adds a whole new view to seeing how people declutter.
Yeah, and you work there too, part-time.
Yeah, so I do one Sunday a month at the moment in the Weybridge office. So every single person that comes into the landfill with a load, they have to come over the Weybridge, and I've got to see the load that they've got and look at the rubbish, you know, from the window. I don't get in there and play with it, but I do a visual on it.
Awesome. So just give us some insight. Tell us what it's like when you're decluttering. What are your options for donations? Tell us all the things.
Yeah. So I'm rural, but there's also people that are classified as remote. So being rural, we have, you know, we live near town or we have cities within a couple of hours. So we've actually got, in our small town of 3,000 people, we've actually got 3 op shops, and they're all run by churches, and they're really there to help give back to the community. So it's all, you know, I know people that run a few of them, and it's mostly elderly population that run them. And I guess what we've picked up from them is that when people are decluttering and they take their things to the op shop, if it's not good quality that they can sell it, then that's taking resources from the op shop, and then they're having to sort it, and then they've got to bring it to landfill anyway. So it's just being double handled, and this elderly population, they're having to sort it, they're having to load into a ute, they're having to bring it to the landfill, and then we're having to process it anyway. So I think people, you know, it's good to be mindful of if it is going to be valuable to someone else, if it is going to be able to, you know, be putting that op shop up for sale, or whether you're better off just taking it to landfill. But where we are in Whitsunday Regional Council, we're one of the few councils, I think, that you actually can, all domestic waste can be taken to landfill for free. So whether that be a fridge, a couch, you know, toaster, clothes, anything, it doesn't cost you to bring it to landfill and dump. Whereas a lot of places, you know, you might get your hard waste collection twice a year, but if you want to take a load to the dump, it might cost you $90 in the cities.
Yep.
So I think that changes people's mentality too, as if, you know, if they can't take it to a dump for free, well, I'm going to take it to the op shop. Hopefully they can use it, but if not, I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. So how does that play out in your area? Do you see things in the tip that could, that you think would be put into the op shops, or what does that look like?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's easier for people to just put it all in one load and I think about it and bring it to landfill rather than thinking about, okay, what can go to the op shop, what can go to landfill, and actually separating it and, you know, stopping off on the way to the op shop or, you know, and especially big items. We see a lot of bikes and, you know, kids' trikes and trampolines, all that kind of thing, which might not necessarily be able to go to an op shop but could be given away, you know, through Gumtree or Facebook or different avenues. And it's just easier for people just to come to the dump with them.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a catch 22, hey, like with the tip being free.
Yes, that's right, people, and especially during COVID-19 like we're in. So I think it's Australia-wide, none of the op shops actually taking goods at the moment. And obviously people are home a bit more, so they're doing big clear outs. And so I work both weekends and we've seen so much coming in and people said to me, I said, oh, we'll normally donate it, but, you know, we don't want to hold on to it and all close. So they're just dumping it.
Sarah, you've in the past picked up some pretty amazing things that people have been bringing to the tip. I remember once when we came up to visit you, my kids still talk about the Barbie car, like the full-on riding car that had room for multiple passengers. Do you see lots of things like that come through the tip that are incredible and would even sell, like people could sell them on Gumtree, not just give them away?
Yeah, so some a lot of landfills actually have a tip shop on site. So our regional council next to us, Mackay Regional Council, they do have a tip shop, and so they do have someone there who goes through, pulls out things that are salvageable or worth a bit of money, and then they sell them in a separate part of the landfill. We don't have the capacity to do that at ours because health and safety these days, and we're just a smaller landfill, so we've only got a couple of people on staff at any given time, and yeah, it's just not worth it for us. But yeah, you definitely see some things and you just think, oh, it's a shame, you know, to have it there. But sometimes at the area, designated area where you do dump your load, people might leave out things, like if it's in good condition, like a fish tank or kids' trikes or something, they might just leave it to the side, and then, you know, you might get someone else that drives up and takes it. But
oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's not really encouraged so much from a council point of view. So we manage landfill for council. Council still own it. But, yeah, a lot of people do that. And in our rural area, so the town in town has a bin collection, like your wheelie bin collection, but there's a lot of properties, you know, 50 k's away or, you know, 30 k's away that don't have a bin collection. They actually have what we call transfer station or satellite transfer station. So they have a few big skip bins and, you know, you might have 100 houses that live within 20 k's that all use these skip bins. So they just, and they get collected once a week and taken to the landfill. So in those, a lot of people, if something is worth keeping and they don't want to take it to the op shop, then they will leave them next to the skip bin and they might stay there for a couple of weeks before someone will pick them up. But so that's a nice little way of that the people give back to each other. Or yeah, if they think it's worth keeping but they don't need it, they'll just leave it beside it instead of putting it inside.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
So challenging being in rural or remote areas because you do have that big tension between, you know, there's only 3,000 people in our town. I'm not sure if anybody in this town needs this.
That's right.
Compared to in the city where there's 5 million people, and even in, you know, even in my suburb that my op shop services, there's more than 3,000 people. So there's a bigger turnover in stock in an op shop in the city.
Definitely. And a remote, you know, again, is something completely different. And a lot of people who live remote on big stations, they have their own little landfill dumping area, you know, between two gullies that they use. So they're not going to, you know, they won't have an op shop for 600 kilometres. You're not going to go take it there.
Can you tell us
you don't have neighbours. You don't have neighbours close by to spring up and go, hey, I know your kids are a little bit younger than me. Do you want to take it? Because they're another 300 kilometres away.
But I think being rural and being remote, when we do purchase things, we think about it more because we can't just nick down to Kmart and get what we need that day. I know myself. So I've got a Big W half an hour away, and that's kind of the only department store within a 3-hour round trip. But even there, it costs me $20 in fuel. It might be half an hour away, but, you know, that's a 60K round trip. So I don't go down, if I need, say, kids need a pair of runners, I don't just go down to Big W and buy them that day. I'll wait and save up till I've got a few things on my list and then, you know, and go once every 2 weeks. And that means that I'm thinking about the purchases more because I'm making myself wait. Whereas if I think if I had shops 10 minutes away and a variety of shops, I'll just go down and get it more easily. Does that make sense?
Yeah, which is, that's what I was going to ask about. I was like, oh, does it, have you noticed your intentionality being very different to what it was when you were growing up?
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, online shopping has changed that as well. So, which is, I'm pretty bad for online shopping, but, and seeing we're not traveling as far with everything going on at the moment, COVID-19, you know, you're not allowed to travel 300Ks to go to the shop. So yeah, it's more online shopping, but then the post takes a long time. So then I'm like, is it really worth it? Like, do I really need this if I'm not going to get it for a month? So yeah, it has changed it definitely from living in the city where you can just nick out and be back in 20 minutes or you've got, you know, 10 different shops to choose from and compare to.
Yeah. And so you feel like COVID has even changed that even more because you know that the post is being delayed at the moment.
Definitely. It's definitely changed it for me. Yes.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So can I get you to go, a second ago you were talking about like really rural stations and stuff having their own landfill. I had a virtual client the other day that had that. So she was piling all the rubbish together and then she was like, oh, so I'm going to put that in the back of the ute and my husband will drive it to our pit. And I was like, oh, I think that's what Sarah's talked to me about before. So how does that work? Do you know the details of that?
Well, a lot of, properties do it, but it's just, it's usually between two gullies. So it's a, you know, deep area. And so you can fill it up and then it'll eventually be level with the rest, you know, with that area of land. You wouldn't just put it on a flat piece of land because then you get a hill.
Right.
Which is where our landfill in Proserpine is, it's on the hill in the Hollow Proserpine because it's basically a hill of rubbish.
And you can see that from your bedroom window, can't you?
Yes, there was a fire last week at the landfill at 9 o'clock at night and I sat down to have a cup of tea and I looked out the window and I said to my husband, I said, there's a fire at landfill. I can see the flames, the smoke, the machine. You better go put it out. He's like, oh. So it is handy living near the landfill except for when the wind blows the wrong way. Back to the pit in remote properties, they do have landfills, little landfills, but it might be a 200K trip away. So
right.
They actually, we've got some friends who live on farms and they might only be half an hour away from us, but they don't get rubbish bin collection. They might, you know, only get a couple of passes a year if they're in a different shire to go to the landfill. So they actually burn a lot of their rubbish.
Okay.
And then, they might have a pit or, you know, might have a gully or a pit or somewhere on their property. I'm talking like, you know, big properties, not 10 acre properties.
Yeah.
So they'll just put all their rubbish in there and, you know, I guess when they get some fill, they probably cover it up every now and again with some clean dirt and just compact it and stuff. But yeah, that's the way a lot of remote people do it.
Interesting. Thank you. I find that really interesting because we're always restricted by like the, I don't know how many litres our bins are. Let's say they're 300 litres or something and you're restricted by that and you're conscious of that. But I think when you're physically, you're the one disposing of it, you're even more conscious because it's, you have the full life cycle of that piece of like that item that you buy. You buy it, you use it, and then you're the one disposing of it.
Yeah, it's staying on your property forever.
Yeah.
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 And then you can go and see that plastic toy you bought for your children 50 years later.
Yes.
Yeah. Terrifying.
Yeah.
And then generations to come will still be able to find that plastic toy as well. It is really fascinating. You live a fascinating life, Sarah.
Oh, parts of it.
Sarah, have you ever heard of a professional organiser in any of, like in your area?
No, I have not.
I wonder if there is. And I would love to hear from professional organisers in rural or remote areas and how that looks. just as a matter of interest.
So what type of things end up in, what's like the, some of the most fascinating things that you've seen at your tip that you would, it would be donatable if it was in the city?
I think probably the most, I don't know if it's fascinating, probably most common thing is bikes and scooters. And it's not just kids' bikes, adult bikes. Like you see a lot of them come in and you kind of think that could, you know, still be going for a few more years or someone could get a new chain and fix that up. So that's probably the most, yeah, common thing we see coming in.
So that's interesting given that there's not a bike shop in town. So if someone wants a bike, they actually have to go to a fair bit of effort to get one. Maybe there's a business opportunity for someone in town just to say, bring your old bikes here and I'll do them up and we'll resell them for like $50 a bike.
Can I burst your bubble? There is a guy that actually does it in town.
Oh, that's the best. Yep. Don't burst my bubble. That's exciting.
Okay. No, there is. And there is a down at Airlie, so it's about half an hour from us. There is like a sports shop which sells bikes and BMW sell some of your cheaper bikes. But yeah, that's probably the most common thing I see come in. And kids' toys, so many kids' toys, like, you know, the big plastic ones that, yeah, just take up space, I guess. And that's probably the thing with buying big things that only last, you know, going to hold your kids' interest for a couple of years. That's what we see a lot of come into the dump. I'm not sure what else. Yeah, a lot of white goods. They're just not built the way they were. I sound like I'm old now, but they really are
old.
Yeah, over 30. But yeah, they really aren't. Like, I know myself, you know, you get appliances and we now get this 7-year extra care because they don't normally last 7 years. And I find that really frustrating for everyone. You'd rather pay a bit extra and it be built well and last than seeing it go into landfill.
Yeah. Yes. It would be lovely if we lived in a world where every creator designed it with circular economy in mind. Mm. Like, how is this going to end up? How can we repurpose it into use again, whether it be just by manufacturing it well so it does last generations, or, you know, how do we repurpose things? So we'll get there hopefully sooner rather than later.
You go.
I was going to say, I'm not sure if they've got it down in Victoria now, but early or last year, the government in Queensland brought in 10 cents return for cans and bottles. So that's made a massive difference to recycling in the area.
Where's that located?
Well, they're actually all over. So it used to be, they used to have bins at a lot of the pubs around, like bottle shops around and stuff. So there was one in Cross Pond, a couple down Airlie Way, and it was almost like a donation bin. You'd have to register your number, bag them all up, and then put them in this bin, and then you'd get the money put into your account electronically.
Cool.
And then it's become so big they've actually got depots where they have employ, you know, 2 or 3 people there full time to take your recyclables, so your cans and bottles, and you get on the spot cash back for them. So that's made a massive difference to the amount of those products that we have coming into landfill.
So let's talk about food for a minute. I know you've got do you still have a refrigerator in the back of your car?
I do, yes.
So I think buying food when you're rural is very different to buying food in the city. Like if we, if we want something, we just pop down to Coles and get it. You've got deep freezers and you guys do a lot of fishing and that kind of thing. How does food waste change when you're living rural than when you're living in the city?
I feel like the products, the fresh fruit that we do get here, a lot of it isn't as good a quality as the cities because it has to travel so far. So we're about a 13-hour truck drive from Brisbane, and we're lucky that in our town closest north of us, Bowen, about an hour away, they actually do grow tomatoes, capsicum, mangoes, that kind of thing. So that kind of produce is lovely and fresh if you get it from the farms. But the produce that you get from, Woolies and Coles and IGA, it's travelled a lot further to get here. It's, you know, taken a lot longer. So I don't find from being in the city, and even when I go down there, you know, once a year for holidays, I don't find it's as fresh and as good a quality. So I don't actually find it lasts as long. But at the same time, I don't want to be going to the supermarket every second day. And especially when I was living, you know, 35 minutes out of town each way, and I would have to do hour round trip just to get, you know, a loaf of bread or some milk, you'd do once a week shop and then that's it. And you'd try and make it last the whole week. But the quality doesn't always last. And I find it's a lot more expensive as well, whether that's, you know, the transport costs or what it is, it's definitely different. And so we do have big freezers, and we do do some of our own animals for our food. And it's just our way of teaching the kids, you know, where their food comes from. And it's also, for us, it's a lot better quality, and it's better for the environment long term than, you know, getting beef shipped up from New South Wales or wherever it comes from, depending on the season and what animals you're having. Yeah, so that's how we've done it. But
yeah, I love that idea.
I do find local green. There is one local greengrocer down Airlie Way, and I only get down there, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks. But I do find they try buy from the local farmers, and it is a lot better quality. But it's just not always an option for us.
And I guess food waste is frowned upon in the sense that if you've got something that's going off, you're more likely to cook with it than just chuck it out, because it's only going to cost you $2 to pick it up again at the supermarket.
Yeah, that's right. But when it's not, you know, readily available, and sometimes, you know, I might want some fresh parsley or I might want some squash, and I'll have to go to both supermarkets in town, and they might have it, but they still might not. Neither of them might have it that week. So you just don't have the variety either.
Yeah. Oh, so I could talk to you for hours on this stuff, sir.
It is very fascinating. Thank you, Sarah, for sharing your life, a little bit of a little insight into your life living in the beautiful Whitsundays. What's the best thing about living in the Whitsundays?
I think it's just the relaxed lifestyle. Hey, just... No one commits. Yeah, hey. No one ever do anything. You can't say, oh, you know, in Saturday 2 weeks we'll have a barbecue lunch, because everyone up here loves fishing. And if the weather comes good for fishing, then that's what takes priority. So we'll be like, yeah, we can have a barbecue if the weather doesn't come good. So that took a bit of adjusting too, but that's just, you know, the way everyone thinks. Just don't want to lock ourselves in, you know, the weather might come good and then we'll go fishing or boating or camping. So, yeah, it is nice, and I think it's good for the kids having that lifestyle.
Yeah, the kids love it. They're just barefoot on the farm. What's the rule, Sarah, with shoes in your town for your kids?
For my kids, they need to wear shoes at hospital, doctors and restaurants, and that is it. And they have to wear them at school now, but when Luke went to school here, you didn't have to wear shoes until grade 6 to get prepared for high school. So primary school, they didn't have to wear shoes.
I just love that.
Yeah, he's 38, so this is, you know, a few years ago, and he thinks it's a bit ridiculous that the kids have to wear shoes to school now.
But at kinder, they didn't have to wear shoes, did they?
They encourage them not to wear shoes at kinder, yes. When they do athletics carnivals at school, you are allowed to have no shoes.
That's the best. I just
Not a shot put, but running races.
So good.
Yeah, so what a different world Queensland is. Far north Queensland.
Yeah.
Hopefully once these travel restrictions lift, we'll all be able to see each other again. But this has been awesome, Sarah. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all your wisdom on pretty much every area of life in rural living. You are going to make so many of our listeners so very happy.
I hope so.
I am like waiting for COVID to finish so I can look up flights to Prospine.
I'll take you out in the boat.
Yeah, and we can train together.
Yeah, sounds good.
You two are awesome. Sarah, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your time, and I love you. And, enjoy the afternoon homeschooling the kids.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was good to chat.
Oh, it's so lovely to speak to you in person for the first time in a long time, even though we're Facebook friends and we, you know, comment on each other's posts and stuff. I'm super excited that you were free to come on today. So thank you, Sarah.
No, thanks, guys.
All right, friends, we will see you tomorrow for a special Saturday episode where we'll be interviewing children that are in Kirsty's and my families. And I think that this probably will be the last Saturday episode as part of the ISO series, because I am going back to seeing clients next week. And so we're wanting to appropriately manage how many podcasts we try and get out to you all. So this will be the last Saturday one for a little while. And yeah, enjoy. I hope you've enjoyed today, and we'll see you tomorrow.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us.
If you've learnt something awesome today, we'd love you to leave us a review on iTunes or Facebook so others can find our podcast too.
Don't forget, you can see the show notes in your podcast app or over at our website, artofdecluttering.com.au. So if there's anything you want more info on, check it out there.
If you'd like to join our supporter community, you can do so over at patreon.com/theartofdecluttering.
We hope you have a great rest of your day
and enjoy the freedom.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.